I'm John Kroll. Coming up on No Limits, we're going to talk about what is perhaps the hottest issue before the Indiana General Assembly, education reform. It was at the heart of Governor Mitch Daniels' State of the State address last week. Already, at least three bills that would change the way we run our schools have been introduced, and more may be coming, provoking more discussion and debate at each step. We're going to take up the subject of education reform today with State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Bennett, the head of the Indiana State Teachers Association, Nate Schnellenberger, and you. You can join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending comments or questions via Twitter or Facebook at WFYI. But first, this news. Welcome. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host for No Limits. We've got an exciting show here. Today we're talking about education reform, and I can tell from the fistful of emails I've already gotten with questions in regard to the topic that we're going to have a lively conversation. Our guest today, our State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Tony Bennett. Dr. Bennett, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you today.
Good to have you here. Thank you. And the head of the Indiana State Teachers Association, Nate Schnellenberger. Nate, welcome back.
Great to be back. Thank you.
The last time we had you guys here, you were actually agreeing with each other most of the time. This was just a few weeks ago, but it was before the election. And you didn't get to the point where you disagreed until the very end of the program when we started talking about the tenure system, teacher tenure system. Now I suspect there are a few more things that you guys will have some civil disagreement about today, and I think I'd like to start the program by framing everybody's talking about education reform, and some parts of the package obviously have been rolled out now, but what are we looking at right now? Dr. Bennett, could you start us off first?
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to talk about the fact that we are talking about comprehensive education reform. So there are a number of pieces to this, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You know, one of which is obviously the bill that was actually heard yesterday in committee, the issue of the expansion and the accountability of charters and how we will look to expand charters to be authorized by private universities, second-class mayors, mayors of second-class cities. That didn't sound right, did it?
Yeah.
So I just got the thumbs-up sign from the folks here. So mayors of second-class cities and, you know, but also talking about accountability because this is an issue of quality. It's mm-hmm. not just an issue of expanding the number of schools. It's the issue of expanding quality schools. The obvious issue, teacher quality, again, the issue of teacher compensation, teacher evaluation, principal evaluation, principal compensation, the issues of flexibility and specifically germane to probably what we'll talk about today, collective bargaining, and then the issue of choice and mm-hmm. parent choices regarding, choices for, you know, government funds to be used at non-government schools, the opportunities for students to leave high school early after their 11th year. So we are talking about comprehensive education reform really around a lot of areas, but those are probably the big ones that'll get the most questions today.
And Nate Schnellenberger, could you talk a little bit about what areas of concern you have with what's been proposed so far?
Well, so far, basically, we've seen two bills, the charter mm-hmm. school bill that's come out of the House. I haven't seen the one that may come out of the Senate yet, and also a collective bargaining bill that's also a House bill. We think both of those are a little overreaching in their initial stages, and we have had some discussion, certainly, with Speaker Bosma about the charter bill, as he's the sponsor of that bill. And we have made some accommodations based on our conversation with him. I know he has made some accommodations in that bill. But we think that the expansion of charters is something that we know will occur. But I think that it's important to remember that charters aren't a panacea. They're not a silver bullet to the problems that exist in certain schools across our state. In fact, only based on the 2010 ISTEP scores of all grades, only one of the top 100 schools was a charter school. And in fact, eight of the bottom 10 were charter schools, and I believe of the bottom 50, 31 were charter schools. So we want to, and Dr. Bennett has spoke about the accountability, and that's going to be addressed, we believe, in this bill, and we hope that it will be. But we just want there to be reasonable discourse about all of the bills that come forth, not only the charter bill and not only the bargaining bill, but also the other bills that and other areas that Dr. Bennett just mentioned.
And what it would, when you talk about a reasonable choice, what are you talking about there in terms of?
Well, I don't think I use. I hope I didn't use the word choice there. Reasonable discourse.
Okay.
So that and we have spoken to all of the Republican leadership in both the House and the Senate, and essentially asked them to include us in the discussions. We know with the large majority in both the House and the Senate, they don't have to do that. But they have been very good about talking to us. Certainly Speaker Bosma has been excellent. I've met with him on a couple of occasions, as I have with Senator Cruz in the, on the Senate side. And so to this point, they've been willing to listen to our recommendations and to our concerns. And I, as I said, with the charter bill, I believe have adopted some of those. That doesn't mean we still like all of it, but we understand.
What parts don't you like?
Right. Well, we think one thing that the parent trigger that's there now, which is 51%, we think that should be higher. We have some concerns about that.
Can you explain for the audience? Most of these folks, we've all read the bill, but I suspect other people actually have lives, unlike the three of us. So, could you explain what the parent trigger is?
Well, I think the parent trigger is that. If 51% of the parents in a particular school vote to make that school a charter school, they can, and we think that that percentage is a little low. Another concern of ours was, and I believe this may have been addressed yesterday. I haven't seen all of the changes that were made yesterday, but one concern of ours, and we think a concern of superintendents certainly and school boards, was that a chartering entity could take a school building that wasn't used or that was termed underutilized, and for a dollar for 20 years, take that school, and in fact, the school corporation would have to maintain that facility. I'm not sure if that was changed. I believe that it was. Dr. Bennett may know more than I, but that was one of the concerns that we had addressed with the speaker the day before yesterday.
What, Dr. Bennett, which part of this entire comprehensive package do you think is the most important piece here? Well, that
I'm going to piggyback off something,
okay.
You know, Nate mentioned. We have advocated all along for a comprehensive approach because there isn't a most important piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we've gotten ourselves into an issue in education nationally, but specifically here in Indiana, of really talking about education issues in single issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the issues we face to improve our education system today won't be solved with kind of the silver bullet approach, trying to look for that panacea. So, you know, whenever I'm asked what is the most important, I always say all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, frankly, we have to address the need for flexibility. We have to address the need for accountability. We have to address the need for more options for children and parents. And to just do one of those will really continue to set up a system where we're really not addressing the structural issues that we need to address in education.
Well, let me reframe the question then a little bit.
Sure.
Here, because given that it is a legislative process, and even, you know, when one party controls both chambers and the governor's office, generally they still don't get everything they want. So what are the highest priorities here? Because it sounds like if you take to the logical extreme, what you're saying here is if I don't get all of it, it doesn't work. So what parts are the most important, the drivers for this?
Well, again, I'm going to go back to the fact that I don't want to say what I don't want to lose are components.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think there's any question that the legislative process will bring about changes and amendments mm-hmm. to each aspect of this and probably improvements because, mm-hmm. you know, for well over 200 years, this process has worked that way.
Yeah.
You know, what I would like to see really is an issue where we take a look at each of the components. I think we have to provide flexibility and authority for local school leadership to run schools to meet the needs of children. So that is a must. You know, that is a must. We must address the issue that we have far too many barriers, far too many, too much underbrush in education to give school leaders the authority to operate. Secondly, we must address the issue of expanding our choices.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that we have an expansion of charters. I hope that we have in some form an expansion of school choice, as you use the term vouchers. Mm-hmm. In this state, and we must address the issue of recognizing and rewarding our best teachers. So again, each of those components are important. We're willing to work with the legislature. We're willing to work with all the stakeholders. We've actually met with about 4,000 teachers over the last 4 or 5 weeks. We're willing to take the input and see what we can do to improve things. But the fact is, we need all of those components in some form.
We're talking about education reform here on No Limits with State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Bennett and the head of the Indiana State Teachers Association, Nate Schnellenberger. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. I'm going to take a call right now. Anthony, are you with us? Hello, Anthony?
I'm here.
Apparently not. So his question, as I, Anthony, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
No, I cannot hear for whatever reason. We got a little bit of a technical glitch here. I'm not picking up the question in the headphones. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, Anthony, hang with us, and we will get you on the air here in just a moment. Thank you. Question really is, as I understand it, his question is about this subject of vouchers or school choice. Now, are we looking at a voucher system with this bill?
Yes, we are.
We are? Okay, and how would it work?
Well, I think first we have to accept the fact that the first parameter we have to put in this whole thing is it has to be a budget neutral issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think we have to remember that. And the second thing I think we have to address is the fact that we are talking about providing educational choices through scholarships to non-government schools for students of modest means. So we're not talking about funding educations of our high-income families to private schools. We're talking about providing students who don't have the choices that my children have, that possibly your children have, that many children have in this state, to attend schools that best meet their needs. So I think you're going to be talking about a means test. You're going to be talking about a means test based on percentages of free and reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. And you'll be talking about scholarships that will be most likely the percentage of the sending school corporation's tuition support.
And Nate Schnellenberger, how does ISTA feel about a voucher or a school choice system?
Well, we have not seen the specific bill that Dr. Bennett references. We have a number of concerns, and one is, Dr. Bennett mentioned that it should be revenue neutral. Well, that means that if money's taken away from public schools, there's less money for those students who remain. And it's running a school corporation, as Dr. Bennett knows, it's when you lose one student or 10 students in a school, those are spread out over the entire school population, and it's not like your costs necessarily go down. And so that's one of our concerns is the education of those children who left behind and the resources available to those children who are still there. Another concern is that it not be a subsidy for the wealthy or for the upper income earners, and that what I have heard from a member of the press, as I said, I haven't seen the bill, but what I've heard from a member of the press is that the income level is quite high. And so we don't think that it should be a subsidy to well-to-do people.
You're listening to No Limits, and we're talking about education reform with Dr. Tony Bennett and Nate Schnellenberger. Have a lot of questions waiting for you. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible by your membership and by Dorman Chamberlain, attorneys concentrating on brain and spinal cord injury. Information about how Dorman Chamberlain can help at tortslaw.com. And by College Mentors for Kids, presenting the 2011 Inspire Awards, honoring both workplace and community mentors. Nominate an individual or organization who has helped to change lives personally or professionally, now through January 26th. More information is available online at collegementors.org and by Aspire Indiana Behavioral Health System, with programs for recovery and therapy tailored to individual needs. More at aspireindiana.org. You're tuned to No Limits here on WFYI 90.1 FM for your information. WFYI Radio is streaming online. Listen at wfyi.org/radio. You can tune into both our HD1 and HD2 broadcast at wfyi.org/radio.
Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking about education reform with State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Bennett and the head of the Indiana State Teachers Association, Nate Schnellenberger. We're going to take a call right now. Anthony, are you back with us?
Hopefully I am.
Great. Thank you. I apologize for the mix-up. What's your question?
Well, my question is that I understand how the voucher system works, but in order for it to work properly, transportation can't be an issue for anybody that's taking a part of it. Because while, you know, somebody is making, I'm just throwing numbers out here that don't mean anything, but somebody is making $200,000 a year, you know, or $100,000 a year or whatever, which should be able to get their child to school pretty easily, regardless of if both parents are working or not, while a person making only $30,000 a year or less won't be able to do that easily. So if the and I understand that the superintendent said means, and I love that, means testing is great, but without the transportation component, you're not really giving kids a choice if they can't get to the school that they actually their parents want them to go to.
Dr. Bennett, you want to take that one first, please?
Well, Anthony, thank you for the point, and it is a great point. It's an outstanding point, and I think in the best-case scenario, and this was actually brought up yesterday in the charter legislation, the proposed charter legislation, Anthony, of using a portion of the transportation fund, the transportation funds of school corporations, to transport children to charter schools, and it drew a tremendous amount of discussion and debate. And so your point is incredibly well taken. It will be very interesting to see how we roll that out. There's also been the discussion of capital projects money, which is again local taxpayer money, as is transportation. How does that work? So, you know, I think there are some large policy issues. To your point, of course, my position has been and always probably will be that we should do everything possible to make sure children who need and want an education that serves their needs are able to obtain it. So it's a great point. I think it's a policy discussion we're going to have.
Has there been any discussion on possibly expanding Indigo and other public transportation and combining that money with the public school transportation?
Boy, Anthony, that's a great. Honestly, I haven't been part of those discussions, but it is, you know, one of the things we've asked as we've traveled around the state is we've asked for creative solutions, and I very much appreciate that. And we'd appreciate if you have some ideas on that to email us.
Right. What would be the email address?
tbennett@doe.in.gov.
Okay. Thank you for the call, Anthony. And I want to, I actually want to refocus this a little bit because I think this is one of the issues. So far, the discussion when we talk about school choice or vouchers seems to take place at a philosophic or a somewhat elevated level about empowering parents and all of that. But there are logistical questions involved, too. And I remember as an old newspaper reporter in this town, Indianapolis Public Schools tried kind of a modified public school choice program about 15 years ago, and it was a logistical nightmare. They had buses that that didn't get kids to school until 11 o'clock in the morning, and school wasn't officially starting at that point. They had kids who were spending 8-10 hours on the bus. They had bus routes where, you know, 1, 2, 3 kids were running from the southwest side up to the northeast side, and nobody in attempting to implement that. Are we having any discussions about how, if you do adopt a system of school choice here or vouchers? And let me toss this one to Nate Schnellenberger because I suspect he's getting lonely over there. Hasn't had a chance to talk for a little bit.
No, but your point is an excellent one, because it has been a philosophical discussion, and now as these bills come forward, the legislators need to look at, well, how would the nuts and bolts of this actually work? And that's where I think sometimes these things haven't been thought all the way through to the ground floor. If you think about from a historical perspective of schools in Indiana, school corporations were formed and boundaries were formed probably for one reason, and that was the geography of that area, and for transportation, so that it would be it could be done in an efficient and effective manner, gather students who are within some close geographic distance from those particular schools. And even now, when we do have in this state, I think sometimes people don't realize it or forget it, we do have public school choice, so they can go wherever they want to, and I don't know the number of students who've taken advantage of that, but that certainly does exist. But your point is well taken. It's one that I think the legislators will have to grapple with as they move toward conclusion later in this session.
Dr. Bennett.
Well, and you know, I think that's something we should always take a look at is some data. I mean, I think you can look right here, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but we have a number of school corporations throughout the state who have seen diminishing student populations over years. And if we look at their transportation funds, they have actually grown. So, you know, there is more money to transport fewer kids. So, you know, that's a whole nother issue that we need to look at our current system. And that is actually a big piece of this, this whole idea, is that we have to rethink education. You know, we developed a system of educating our children. I use the number 70 years ago. It was much longer ago than that. Mm-hmm. But I often challenge folks to think, how much has our economy changed? How much has society changed in 70 years? Now, if you think about all those changes over 70 years, how much has education changed? Mm-hmm. And it's minimal.
We've gotten an email question here that I think puts this in a new light. It's from Norma Blake, one of our listeners in Greenwood. And she says, I'm just going to read it verbatim because I can't do justice by boiling it down. Regarding any possible adoption of a school voucher system, I would pose this question to your panelists. Would you support the social change that accompanies school choice and the potential for the loss of traditional neighborhood schools? And then she says, I have lived in a country, Australia, where the government funds the child, essentially a voucher mechanism. I observed profound cultural differences resulting from the difference between that system and ours. Private schools proliferate under the system. These private schools do not accept taxpayer funding, then magically deliver a quality education equally to all comers. They screen their students. Parents pay tuition subsidies. In general, the more a family can pay, the higher quality of schooling their children receive. Stigma is attached to underfunded public education, and prestige attached to a parent-subsidized private education. Private school prestige is tiered. A middle-aged acquaintance once commented, people still ask me what school I went to, and they're not talking about college. Religious influences are diluted in the parochial schools. Schools draw students not from neighborhoods, but from broad attendance areas. Train stations brim with children in school uniforms each morning and afternoon. Our babysitter described riding trains across Melbourne every weekend to visit her school chums scattered over the city. So basically what she's talking about is, have we thought through some of the consequences of social disruption here? Dr. Bennett, do you?
Well, you know, my response back to that is, you know, there are also, we had the opportunity to speak to the former superintendent in Edmonton, Alberta, mm-hmm. and the second largest public school system in Edmonton, Alberta was actually the Catholic school system.
Okay.
And he actually spoke eloquently in my office about how much that improved public education, because it was transparent, it was accountable, it forced him to change the way he and his schools operated to elevate the quality of their schools. Mm-hmm. So, I am a firm believer in a free market approach to education. I think we have the world's greatest university system. And one of the reasons we have the world's greatest university system is because our universities compete. Students go to Franklin
College, yes.
Because Franklin College best meets their needs, and they choose Franklin College maybe over IU or Purdue, and vice versa. And I think that is what makes our university system so great in this country. And I think it will, we've seen over the last couple of years, we've actually seen what increased competition and accountability, the pressure that those two forces have put on education. I think we've seen the dividends they paid. And I think this is another opportunity for us to provide rigorous, challenging instruction to children and really force improvement on the basis of competition and accountability.
Nate Schnellenberger, you want to add anything here? Or?
Well, I think your listener makes some excellent points in terms of neighborhood schools, and we remember back to the time that there were strong neighborhood bonds created by those particular schools. I would say one thing that, and I don't think that Tony meant it in the way that he said that, but when he said that schools haven't changed in the last 70 years or longer than that, well, I'll tell you what, I started teaching in 1973. And 33 years later, there was a tremendous change in what we taught and in how we taught that and in school. So I think that I don't believe that he meant that we're still doing the same things in schools, because we're certainly not. The advent of technology and other teaching methods have certainly changed and improved.
We're going to take another call right now. Thomas, are you with us?
I'm
from Indianapolis.
You.
Good to have you. Thank you for joining the program.
Thank you. I actually have a comment and request for a response from Mr. Ellenberger.
Schnellenberger. I apologize.
Ellenberger?
Yeah.
I wanted to, I believe Dr. Bennett's title is Superintendent of Public Instruction.
Yes, state superintendent of public instruction.
What he's advocating is being a superintendent of private instruction. And I have a strong aversion to privatizing our schools and using public funds towards this. The public schools are an institution almost 200 years old, and we've invested, they're our heritage, and to sell them to private institutions without any accountability. He claims accountability, but private institutions, private groups do not have the kind of accountability and electability of oversight. And I believe we could lose something we've built up over 200 years, and that continues to improve. That, as well as the university systems, the public university systems. But I would appreciate a comment on those comments from the ISTA representative.
Thomas, thank you very much for the call. Nate Schnellenberger, and I suspect, Dr. Bennett, you're going to want to crack at this one too, but that funneling public funds to private institutions, and I think there's a question I'd reframe a little bit coming out of that too, but Nate Schnellenberger, please.
Well, certainly that's one of our concerns, is the using of public tax dollars for private and often religious schools, and even the constitutionality of all of that. But on a bigger playing field, the comparing apples to oranges, and we hear public schools sometimes degraded based on certain test scores, and even though there has been certainly improvement in the last couple of years on in just about every level, but the fact that a public school does, by law, it's a common school, and it's any student. We take any student who shows up at the front door, regardless of their physical situation, their mental situation, their financial situation, and we do our absolute best every day with those students. And that's not to say that Well, what I would say then is that I guess private schools do have the ability, if they so choose, not to take in all students. And the other thing that is that once those students are in those schools, they have the ability to remove those students much more easily than public schools do. We just heard a superintendent this morning. I was on your television show this morning, and a superintendent talking about the fact that at the end of the school year, they have had seniors come back in early May who were essentially removed from a private school, and they counted on that public school's graduation rate. And he said, and the reason they came in is because they weren't going to graduate. And so those types of things need to be addressed and need to be dealt with so that accountability is the same, so that if they're going to use public money, and so that the entrance requirements would be open to all.
Well, and I just to clarify, it's not my television show. It's
WFYI.
Our partner television station here.
Yeah, within the same building.
In the same building, and it's a good show. Everyone ought to watch it. We love those folks. Dr. Bennett, your response.
A number of things. First, my title is Superintendent of Public Instruction. I would define my title as I want to be clear as what I believe my public is.
Mm-hmm.
And my public is every child in this state. I don't, you know, whether our listener understands this or not, the Indiana Department of Education provides services already for publics, traditional publics, public charters, private schools, and even homeschool. Mm-hmm. So if all of those children receive some type of services from the Indiana Department of Education, all of those children fit into my public. And in order for this state to flourish, every child has to have a quality education. If we're going to develop this state into the force it can and should be nationally, and internationally, if we're going to drive economic development in this state, we have to think about all children. So, you know, that's my public. I do want to talk a little bit about this issue of public school choice, too. And this issue of public school choice, you know, Nate mentioned that we have a lot of public schools that have opened up their borders, if you will, to transfers. Mm-hmm. We have seen an interesting dynamic in some of these instances, and the governor actually mentioned this in his State of the State address. We actually have instances where some of our public schools have higher entrance requirements for students to transfer in than the non-public schools in their areas. So if a student lives in one school corporation and wants to move to another school corporation, the receiving school corporation has actually put higher entrance requirements for that student to transfer than some of our non-publics.
Well, and I let me reframe what I think was the gist to some degree of the caller's question. I'm going to toss this one back to you, Tony Bennett, which is really with a voucher system, at some degree, it carries with it a degree of state or government control, which then means that the private schools to some degree stop being private, which is the other side of this coin that occasionally you hear.
Well, you know, again, I will go back to something we've done that has been a little bit controversial, but I think this begins to even the playing field. And I've spoken to some public school superintendents who appreciate this. Charter schools next year will have grades on them, just like our traditional public schools. They will be A, B, C, D, F. If a private school accepts a voucher, they too will have all of their students tested using the state's assessment, and they too will receive a letter grade in the same manner using the same metrics as public schools.
So there will be strings attached to the public.
Without question. And you know what? Yeah. Indiana is a little bit of an anomaly nationally because a large percentage of our private schools do engage in the state's assessment system.
Okay. We're talking about education reform here with our guest, Nate Schnellenberger, who is the head of the Indiana State Teachers Association and the state superintendent of public instruction, Tony Bennett. We are going to take just a real short break to thank some folks right now. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible by your membership and by Terry Lee Honda Service in Avon. featuring factory techs with 29 bays for all warranty work, plus an area for family waiting. That's TLC, the Terry Lee Commitment. More at TerryLeeHonda.com. And by Indigo, providing more than 700,000 passenger trips each month. To learn how to use public transportation for your daily commute, online trip planning is available at Indigo.net or by phone at 635-3344. And by Harris Commercial Bank, dedicated to offering financial guidance and resources designed to increase the value of businesses. Information is available at harrisbank.com/commercialbank, member FDIC. You're tuned to No Limits here on WFYI 90.1 FM for your information. Tune in to Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock here on 90.1 FM. Snow for the rest of this afternoon with a high around 25 degrees. For the complete forecast, call the weather line at 635-5959.
Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're having a really lively conversation about education reform with our guests, Dr. Tony Bennett, who is the state superintendent of public instruction, Nate Schnellenberger, who is the head of the Indiana State Teachers Association, and a lot of our listeners who have sent emails and calls. We're going to take one of them right now. Sarah, thank you for joining the program.
Hi. I'm a former teaching assistant in the public schools. I'm also a product of public schools here in Indianapolis. And I am going to IUPUI with a lot of people who hope to work in libraries and public schools. And I'd like to know why we can't use the money that we have for public schools to improve the public schools instead of funneling it away to schools that aren't part of the public school system. It sounds like this no budget increase would really just take money from the schools that are already failing.
Thank you. That's a good question, Sarah. Dr. Bennett, how about if we go with that one first?
You know, I would challenge a little bit of what you're talking about by I think I mentioned this actually the last time we were on the air here. Mm-hmm. I spoke of Evansville, Vandenberg County, who, by the way, their superintendent and their teachers association have a very good relationship and have done many creative things down there. Superintendent Vince Bertram would tell you that in difficult economic times, Sarah, he has cut $8 million plus out of his budget, expanded academic programs for children, and improved his student performance. And I think as we look statewide where we are today, in some of the most challenging economic times we've had in this state's history, okay, and at least in my lifetime, maybe it's not in history, but at least in my lifetime, we've had actual improvement in student performance. So I guess the issue of money and what have you, I don't find that correlation. I think there's no better time for us to rethink the structures in education that we have. I don't think there's a better time because, first of all, if you do want to talk about money, Governor Daniels and the General Assembly have done an incredible job of keeping this ship afloat. I mean, all we have to do is look next door to the west and see the tax increase that Illinois is proposing to their citizens. We look to the east and see the hole that Ohio is talking about and the huge cuts to education they're talking about. And we notified our superintendents, and they were all pretty pleased that education funding in 2011 was going to stay constant as it was with 2010, and that we were not seeking a cut in the biennial budget.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me, just so we walk through this and understand it, if we are going to do this as you know, budget neutral, basically, which means it's kind of a zero-sum game, if you do pull money then out of the public schools in that area, doesn't that mean that that local public school will have less funds?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
But you know, my question always comes to I'm going to give a comment and a question.
Sure.
Or a question and a comment.
Sure.
Is our job to fund school corporations or is it to fund the education of children? That is fundamentally the question we wrestle with. I frankly believe our fundamental job is to make sure our children are educated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I don't think it's to perpetuate school corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, we have a phenomenon in Indiana, and it's really not just Indiana, a number of states do, called the de-ghoster,
mm-hmm.
where we are already paying, according to Indiana University's Center for Evaluation and Education Policy, we're already paying $94 million a year for children who don't exist because we continue to pay public school corporations after students leave. So, you know, those are some policy discussions that, again, I think they're very important. One, we are about funding and making sure our children are educated.
Well, and in framing the question, it's more about having people understand exactly what is at play here at some level. Nate Schnellenberger, I saw you lifting an eyebrow while Dr. Bennett was talking.
Well, I think, I guess it's a philosophical discussion maybe that I don't want to get into but necessarily, but I think that it's a discussion about, do you want the state to totally determine how every dollar is spent, or do you want the school corporation and its locally elected school board to do that? And our organization supports that second option, the local control, very much. But you know, I want to shift this a little bit,
sure.
And because I don't want to leave here without talking about this.
Okay.
First of all, I believe that as a general rule, that public schools are doing very well, and they're doing better. But they continue to need to improve, all of them, even those that are at the highest level of attainment, need to push for improvement. Everyone agrees on that. But where schools aren't doing as good a job as we would like for them to do, I think we need to focus on those schools and determine why it is that students aren't performing as well there. And if it's because of economics, or if it's because of language barriers, or if because of some other reason, we need to address those in those local communities and provide the remediation or the help that those students need to be successful in those local school communities. And so, and one of the things I think that this legislature is not talking about, but I think needs to start talking about, is full day kindergarten for students in Indiana. I think that schools that do fund a school full day kindergarten, the superintendents there, the principals there, the teachers there would tell you that it helps improve and bring and closes that achievement gap where it does exist and helps improve learning. So I know that the financial times are tough, but because they are tough, I don't think that we need to look away from those areas where we could help all students.
Let me
address that, because I think we have, and that makes a good point. You know, mm-hmm. Nate mentions full-day kindergarten. The governor has come out in support of full-day kindergarten. Now, I am an advocate of full-day kindergarten. But, you know, what we have never done in this state is we have never had a discussion where we put together the two most important forces of this discussion. And the two most talked about forces of this discussion always happen separately. And those two most important forces are education fiscal policy,
mm-hmm.
okay, and education policy. Nate mentions full-day kindergarten. That's an education policy decision.
Mm-hmm.
That is an education policy decision that has, you know, an education, a student achievement impact, right? So if we all agree on that, now let's go back to the de-ghoster. Can anyone explain to me the education value mm-hmm. and the education student performance value of $94 million? So until we begin to have education fiscal policy discussions right with education policy discussions, we're going to continue to struggle along this line. And I think the General Assembly is taking a big step forward this year, because I'm of the understanding that for the first time, we're actually going to have the education budget heard in the education committee to start.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have the discussion about what we're spending our money on. Because that's a big issue here.
Well, and I want to think how I frame this question, but I think it's one that is essential to this discussion, this process right now. I have been involved in some way with covering education and education issues and the way they intersect with the political process now for close to, well, actually more than 30 years. I just made myself feel really old. And for most of that time, you've seen, frankly, the teachers union and to some degree the the business community at loggerheads over education policy. Is there a point where we can find some common ground here and, you know, we can figure out a way to work in the interest of children's, because it seems like often we frame this discussion as in terms of a battle. So could you talk a little bit about that? With Nate Schnellenberger, you were leaning into the microphone with a certain amount of eagerness.
Yeah, my back's just getting tired.
Oh, okay.
No,
okay.
No, yeah, you know, I don't know why that exists.
Okay.
The dynamic that you said where business and the school community or our teachers association, but I think part of it is there are many in business who run a business and they think that schools should be operated exactly the same. And while a school may be operated along some business model, the fact is that our product is human beings, and they are not chair legs or car parts. That they come to us in all different varieties and all different levels of ability, and we are charged with dealing with maybe as many as 30 or 40 in a classroom at a time, and all of those different personalities and those different learning styles. It's entirely different than a production line, and I think sometimes there is that. I don't know what the term I'm looking for, but that disconnect there between the business and the school community. Now, in terms of running the school itself, the business operations of the school, that's a whole different ballgame.
Okay. Dr. Bennett, you were nodding your head at points and shaking them in others. So.
In one instance, I really want to talk about this issue about the loggerheads.
Yeah.
That, you know, first, I think, you know, Nate and I are career educators. Yeah. Okay, and I'm going to tell you something about career educators. We like to get along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not into this. You know, even when I go visit teachers who just vehemently disagree with me, they do it in the most agreeable manner, because I think that is a characteristic of educators.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I think one of the things we have to do is engage in debate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have, in many instances, I believe we've walked away from debate as it applies to education reform. You know, I think that's why I think this is such an exciting time for education in Indiana, because I don't think anyone doubts what my positions, what the positions of the department, some of the positions that are being laid out in the General Assembly. And for the first time ever, we're going to have a spirited debate. And I believe if we look back at our nation's history, mm-hmm. some of our greatest solutions have come from our differences. You know, we crafted two pretty important historical documents. I mean, let's just talk about the Constitution for a minute. I don't think the guys who crafted that, I don't think they all agreed on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when they banged that thing out, there was probably some pre-spirited debate.
That's why we have a bicameral legislature.
So my point is, we have to have that same type of debate in education today.
We're going to take a call. Ed, you're calling from Indianapolis, as I understand it.
Oh, thanks for my call.
Thank you for joining the program.
Thank you. Good to hear you good gentlemen. My question is to Dr. Bennett. I, too, am an educator here in the city of Indianapolis, specifically urban education. And when you look at the data really across the country, but specifically as it relates to the city, when you see, if we want to coin it, an achievement gap, there's a disproportionality among students of color as they perform on standardized tests, graduation rates, et cetera. And so I think there are two arenas for which we're looking at, you know, how we address reform. But above all, when you see those deficits or achievement gaps, they usually reside around those urban spaces, those large metropolitan areas. And so the question has been on the table for many years, how do we address that? You know, as a consultant, as an educator, many of us have proposed professional development for teachers around cultural competency, equity pedagogy, mm-hmm. cultural relevancy as it relates to curriculum and instruction. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that and how that's going to be, or if you think it's necessary for that to be part of this reform effort.
Thank you, Ed, for the question.
Ed, great question. And they just whisper in my ear, you know, he talked about poverty. And let's not forget about, you know, how we address the issues of the gaps with our disadvantaged students, regardless of their color. But to your point, you know, we have invested in, we brought in Dr. Roger Cleveland from Eastern Kentucky, an associate professor who has actually done quite a bit of work on cultural competency. We brought in the National Council for Educating Black Children. We brought in the NAACP. We brought in our different groups. We also brought in our education service centers to talk about how we address this issue statewide. So, yes, we have. But I also want to say this. One of the things we have to have the courage to do that has been absent in the past, and I believe that the issue you're talking about is vitally important. But if we are not willing to place accountability at the end of the sentence, what I think we learn about human behavior is you don't move the needle.
Mm-hmm. Nate Schnellenberger, that question about dealing with poverty and basically disadvantaged participants in the education system, what more should we be doing?
Well, I think it goes back to something I spoke of earlier, and that is full-day kindergarten, early childhood education, remediation to help students who come from poverty, who don't have the books in the home, whose parents may be working two jobs and can't spend the time with them that maybe more well-to-do financially parents can, to help make up those things. It's a shame that every student doesn't come to school exactly prepared for school, exactly the same way. But that's just the way that our society is. And schools have been charged with getting everybody to the same point at some time in their career. And some just have farther to go because of through no fault of their own, but because of the environment that they, the financial environment that they come out of. And I think that's something that we all would like to address in some manner. But I think early childhood education, full-day kindergarten, remediation throughout the school year and in the summer would be big steps toward helping eliminate that gap.
Dr. Bennett, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to
have
the last
I want to, you know, as we've traveled around the state and dealt with our underperforming schools, I'm going to go to even a more foundational root cause. And that's high expectations. We can't have schools where, because children are poor, children are black, children speak English as a second language, we can't expect less of those children. You know, that's the soft bigotry of low expectations. And we have to change that culture that all children can learn in Indiana at a high level. I think we've mastered that all children can learn. I don't think we've mastered as adults that all children can learn at a high level. So let's start with having the highest expectations and let's teach to those expectations.
Tony Bennett, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Nate Schnellenberger, Head of the Indiana State Teachers Association. I want to thank you for coming in. I hope you will come back once the session's a little bit further along and we can continue this conversation, because I really feel like we only began to cover the ground today. I also would really like to thank my listeners. I apologize for the fact that we were not able to get more of the calls or more of the emails. We're going to continue talking about education reform next week with a panel of civic leaders, education leaders, and experts. And I hope you will continue. I'm going to go through. If we can reframe some of these email questions, we will deal with them next week. Thank you for listening. I'm John Kroll. Talk with you next Thursday. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. Board Engineers, Matt Sosi and Josh Hamig. And intern, Savannah Rains. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, and you can listen online at WFYI.org.